It is Tuesday, January 11th. Welcome to episode 192 of Menace to Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host. Excited today. I guess I always say that. I'm always excited, but it is the end of college football. It is officially over, and Georgia is your national champion, as a lot of people would have predicted early in the year. Not necessarily the path you would have thought after losing to Alabama in the SEC championship game, Michigan and Cincinnati getting into the college football playoff. We had a lot of drama this year. A lot go down, including Ohio State losing the rivalry game for the first time in 10 years. So a lot of things were different in college football, but the SEC reigns supreme at the end, having both teams represent the conference in the national championship game, and then obviously unavoidable with that scenario. The SEC brings home another national championship, and well-deserved, I will say, well-deserved. And it makes you, if you're a Buckeye fan, it makes you a little salty because neither team was invincible. This was not 2020 with Alabama, Devontae Smith, Mac Jones, a great defense. It was not a team. Georgia was not a team that just looked impeccable, looked like one of the best teams that you could discuss in the last decade. Certainly not. It was not Joe Burrow and that offense of 2019 LSU Tigers National Championship with their defense also playing well. It was not Trevor Lawrence and Clemson. This was little old Stetson Bennett, a small town Georgia kid, preferred walk-on. We'll talk about his story when we get to him. And a vaunted defense at that, but not a perfect defense. Not without flaw. The defense was really good in some aspects, but they were beatable in others. And as an Ohio State fan, you have to be kind of salty that you couldn't get the defense right by the end of the year, beat Michigan, win the Big Ten, make the playoff, and make a run at it. Just unfortunate, and just, you know, it's a missed opportunity because this was not a year where you had to face, you know, the Steel Curtain or the New England Patriots. This was a year where literally whoever made it in that game, they had a shot. They had a shot to beat either Georgia or Alabama because, as I said, neither team has been what was just unbeatable. I mean, both teams lost, right? but I do want to, before we get started, I want to thank everybody for really all year. We did three different squares. We did a Buckeye season board. We did the championship postseason board. And then we did the big money board. And it was at the last hour. I mean, literally 5 minutes before kick, we sold our last square, but we sold them all. Raised $5,000 for charity, so that's $15,000 total on the season. Just appreciate everybody for supporting and playing and having fun. We had a big $3,000 winner. What a wild way to lose the $3,000 if you had the final score in that pick six. God, if the kid just takes a knee, and I know one of the guy that had the score that should have hit or would have hit is a longtime listener, and I feel awful for him, but hey, that's football for you. Keeley Ringo screwed you big time. So we are done with that for college football, obviously. I'm thinking about doing a Super Bowl squares board, maybe even throw in the AFC-NFC championship because people seem to like it. I love it. I enjoy it. My friends, my family, they all buy squares because they enjoy it. And a lot of them have broke even on the year. Obviously, if you win the 3,000 on the national championship, it's hard. We didn't have enough squares for you not to break even. So you made a lot of money. It's just a fun thing to do. It's a fun fundraiser, and we're excited to do it. We'll do another one for March Madness, though that one is a bitch, man. There's a million games. Paying out all those people is a pain in the ass. But it's fun, and it's all for a good cause. Obviously, supporting many charities, in the one being the Earl and Jean Bruce Charitable Benefits with the Zone 6 Fund. Going to talk a little bit about that. But I did want to mention, I haven't promoted them enough, our handicapping team over at Menace to Picks. Go follow them. We did our quarter review of September, October, November, December, which is college, basically the football season. And they ended the season, those 4 months. What is that? 4 months? September, October, November, December. Yeah, 4 months. So a third of the year, a little bit bigger than a quarter, I guess. I wanted to do football season. 411 units up. September, October, November, December. That's if you bet $10 a unit, you would have made $4,110 in 4 months. So I'd say the $40 is definitely worth it. So go check them out. It's on patreon.com/menace2picks, or it is on, just follow them on Twitter at menace2picks. And I will say this, it is a tool. You got to track the picks. You got to be intelligent about it. You can't just blindly bet everything. You got to keep an eye on trends, heaters, cold streaks. And if you do that, the best gamblers that are subscribed to us, they made way more than $4,000 because they followed trends and rode hot streaks. And with gambling getting legalizing, and it's going to be legal active, I guess, this year in Ohio, you should sign up now to get a feel for it and learn how to use it before it's, you know, really go time. And we do have a friend of Menace that is a sports book that you can bet on wherever you are. Shoot me an email at Zach@Menace2Sports and I will get that. And also, I want to mention a great option. One of our partners is MyBookie. MyBookie, if you use promo code Menace, you get a free deposit match. Go sign up now. You get whatever you put in $200, they give you $200 free. And I'm going to give you our handicapping picks for the day. This is from our handicappers. It's not from me because I was hot and then I went cold. But our handicappers have been killing it. So they're playing four different plays today. One is Toledo basketball money line. Fire that right now. Then a two-leg parlay, Kentucky money line and the Tampa Bay Lightning money line. The third play is the Blue Jackets money line. And the fourth play is Blue Jackets versus Hawks over 6. So there you go. Go on MyBookie. It's an unbelievable place to bet. Go on there. Use promo code Menace. Get free money. Fire those bets. When you win, return and sign up for Menace to Picks. And you can start your sports gambling journey as Ohio is about to make it legal here in 2022. And just really excited about that platform and everything we have going on. I did want to mention, this is getting a little long-winded, but with the end of football season comes a new beginning, right? And we are going to re-energize our YouTube channel in the off season and carry it through next season. It just became a ton of work, and we had a major studio gaffe that caused the end of our YouTube content. But we're reinvigorating that, and we'll get that going here in the next week or two. So I'm excited about that. Also, with the Zone 6 Fund, the charitable fund, we are starting kind of the sister leg of that, which is a for-profit venture, and it is going to be an athlete development platform. We're going to have a month-to-month subscription as well as an e-course where you can really tap into the brain of a very high-level college football coach, and we will grow from there. We are going to grow into strength and conditioning, athlete development from all aspects, all angles, multiple sports. But for now, we're starting with football skill. So I will give you all those details when it's ready to roll. Already have a ton of content, a ton of teaching tools. If you are a high school kid, you have a high school kid, middle school kid even, or you just love the deeper analytics and the higher level teaching of college football or football, the game of football in general, it is a must subscribe. And I'm working on the price point, so I will get you that information. But Zone 6 is coming. By the end of the week, we will have some announcements. So a lot going on over here at Menace to Sports. Cameron Media is my parent company. We're really excited about it. So thank you all for sticking with us all football season. This offseason, we are going to make sure we deliver excellent content, a bunch of interviews, a bunch of stuff going on that is going to be different than, you know, your typical ESPN garbage. So thank you for being a listener. But we got a game to talk about. We got a lot of current events to talk about. So enough about that. Let's get to the show.
What a hit, Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there? And you didn't invite me, hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Well, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is that time of year where coaching changes happen quite frequently, right? A lot of times those head coaching jobs fall first, right? Because they need a head coach in place for signing day. But a lot of changes are made now, right? Teams are done with their seasons. Position coaches can move around a little bit. And obviously the NFL openings will cause even more movement, especially if a college coach, maybe a Jim Harbaugh, were to snag the Bears job. You'll have a second wave of movement. That's how the coaching industry works, right? It's waves of movement, which with every decision, there's a trickle-down effect. You look at any decision when Urban Meyer chose Florida over Notre Dame, you know, things like that you can speculate, like what would have been in college football if Urban Meyer stayed true to his contract and went to Notre Dame instead of Florida. What would have happened, right? You would have never had the Charlie Weiss era in South Bend. What would have happened at Florida? It's crazy to think about. But with coaching change, Ohio State obviously has already announced two official hires. Jim Knowles is the defensive coordinator, and Buckeye Nation is fired up about that. And the other one I've been talking about forever, Justin Fry, is officially the associate head coach and offensive line coach. And I'm not going to go through why that's great. I've told you several times, I mean a dozen times probably, why Justin Fry was absolutely the hire for that position. This offensive staff with Brian Hartline promoted to keep him here, right, with a big raise and a bullshit title. Which is what they are, but that's fine. It's a way to keep a guy, a great coach, right? You have Brian Hartline at receivers, Kevin Wilson running the show, the CEO, who is invaluable, his value to Ohio State in coaching the tight ends. And then obviously Corey Dennis coaching the quarterbacks. Justin Fry now will have the O-line, and Tony Alford has the running backs with Ryan Day CEOing the whole thing. The offensive staff is star-studded. It's excellent. I give it an A++. And the defensive side of the ball is yet to be seen. Love the hire of Jim Knowles. Larry Johnson is not retiring. That is official. I don't know if people know that yet, but he is 100% not retiring. He will be back. That is a guarantee. You can book it. You heard it here. And then Kerry Combs and Al Washington are the question marks. Will they remain? Will they stay? Right? And then obviously Parker Fleming rounds out the special team. So staff is intact, could see a change on defense, but might not. Either way, I think you have the right sheriff in town and a lot of positive thoughts in Buckeye Nation. I will say this though, on January 11th, the staffs always look like they are great and everyone's excited for the next year. So hindsight gives you perspective. We'll see what happens, see what Jim Knowles can put together. But Justin Fry has arrived. He is in town, and he is ready to give you the best offensive line in Ohio State history, as well as the best offensive line recruiting class in Ohio State history. A couple other things that happened. Obviously, college football playoff expansion talks are a complete fucking train wreck. Who is shocked? Anyone? I'm not. For one main reason. Kevin Warren is involved. I mean, this is a bunch of buffoons trying to accomplish something that is actually important and going to take some work. And when you put a guy like Kevin Warren in the middle of that, holy shit, he is the main obstacle. Though there are others. It's all about one thing right now. There's one hangup that Kevin Warren has, and that's an automatic bid for the Big Ten champ. He will not budge. His feet are dug in. They're in cement. He won't budge because he believes the Big Ten champion should get an automatic bid. Now, when I say that, that sounds like reasonable, right? Why not? Why wouldn't the Big Ten get an automatic bid for their champion? Because what if? You have a 7-4 Iowa team who goes in and upsets, let's say, Ohio State. Ohio State's 11-1. They upset, let's say Ohio State's quarterback's hurt. They upset Ohio State, and they sneak out a Big Ten championship. I can see both sides to this argument. One is, when did they lose? How did they lose? That's why the playoff committee, don't get me started on the committee, but a committee of competent people should be able to decide, does an 8-4 Iowa team belong in the playoffs? If they lost early in the year, maybe some guys were hurt, maybe you give them a shot, right? A 4-loss team can make it, right? If you expand to 12 teams or 8 teams or whatever the table, whatever the slot allotments are. But should they get in automatically over, let's say, a 12-0 Cincinnati team or a 12-0 UCF team? Should they automatically get in? I don't believe they should. But it's just amazing that Kevin Warren is looking at it in this frame of reference, through this lens. Because most, you know, 99.9% of the time, almost every year, the team that should win the Big Ten in that game does. So, oh, baby, what is you doing, Kevin Warren? Expansion will guarantee, here's what expansion will do and why he's such a fucking idiot. Expansion will guarantee that a playoff caliber team that might not get in does get in. A la the 2015 Ohio State team. That is only going to help the Big Ten. Why in the world should a four-loss team automatically get in when there could be an undefeated group of five team like a Boise State that you would love to see because they didn't play some of the national powers. They didn't play in the ACC or SEC or Big Ten. Give them a shot. A team that lost four games should never automatically get in. They should be considered as conference champions to get in, but automatically? It's just dumb. All you're doing by slowing this playoff talk down is preventing the 2015 Ohio State team or someone of that. Shit, this past year's Ohio State team. You'd have had Michigan and Ohio State in the playoffs if you just expand, because the committee would have picked them as one of the top 12 or 8 teams. That would have happened. And who knows what could have happened, right? We know the defense probably wasn't going to be in shape enough. It wouldn't have been up to form. It wouldn't have been up to standard to win it all. They would not have beat either team last night, save that narrative. Ohio State would not have beaten Georgia or Alabama last night. That would not have happened because the defense isn't right. It needs fixed. But this guy, Kevin Warren, just continually proves he is an idiot. He saves his nose to spite his face more than anyone I have ever seen in quote-unquote leadership. I refuse to call him a leader, but he is certainly in a leadership job. And it's not just him. I believe the Pac-12 is also pushing for that, because you got to think about it. What's the likelihood that a Pac-12 champion gets left out? Probably pretty high, right? Probably. I mean, there's been several times where a Pac-12 champion would have been left out because the Pac-12 has traditionally been garbage. Now, that is also short-sighted. If Lincoln Riley gets USC back to prominence, you are going to guarantee USC makes the playoffs, right? Even with two losses, where they would not if we keep the format as is. It's just dumb. These leaders are idiots. They don't see what actually the benefit is of expanding. And I'm not a big expansionist. I don't believe wholeheartedly we should expand the playoffs 100%. I just think it's going to happen, so let's do it right. And having an automatic bid for a conference champion is stupid. Here's what they should be discussing. How do we select the committee, and is there a competency test? Or are we going to let like some lawn care guy on the committee, or an energy CEO on the committee? That's what should be the contention point, not an automatic bid. Let's ensure that we're going to get a committee of competent people to decide who the teams are that should be in the playoffs. If we do that, no one will ever complain. How could you complain? If you lost four games, you don't deserve it. You might get a shot because they consider the full body of work. I could go on and on and on about this, but this is just the incompetence at the top, at the conference level now. We've trickled down from the NCAA. Now we're at the conference level. Complete incompetence because you don't have football guys in there. Kevin Warren doesn't know shit about running anything except for posting pictures of himself in his office as a shrine. This guy's an idiot. And these conference commissioners just can't see the big picture. And I'm sure that's what conferences like the SEC are saying right now. What is wrong with these people? We are with you. The fans are with you, commissioners that actually understand. All right, before we get to the game, one other thing. And if you've listened to this show ever, you know how much I despise these. But ESPN and 247 Sports dropped their way too early top 25s for 2022, and it's just laughable. Laughable. I'll give you 247s. They have Bama at 1, Ohio State at 2, Georgia at 3, A&M at 4, Notre Dame at 5, Clemson at 6. Clemson. They think Clemson, with how DJ Uiagalelei played, without their both coordinators. I mean, Brent Venables is gone. I don't know if anyone told 247 that. At least ESPN has Clemson at 11. They have Clemson at 6. Michigan at 7, losing everybody. Utah at 8. Michigan State at 9. Baylor at 10. LOL. I just had to bring that up. Had to share it with you because it's all for clicks, I guess. I mean, I clicked it. I gave them a click. But it's just stupid. Like, I promise you that is not the top 10, even at preseason. We still have to go through transfer portals, spring ball. So much has to be done. I give you a tentative who I think might be good list in August, because to name a top 25 is just stupid. But before we get to the game, I mean, we're going to break this game down eventually. I did want to play, if you haven't heard it, then you're going to hear it again, because I think it's excellent. It's why Nick Saban gets the most out of his players, why he is the best college football, the best coach probably in our lifetime, my lifetime, certainly in 40 years. He is absolutely insane. The success he gets from, and more than that, how hard he gets these highly recruited, highly touted kids to go. In the postgame press conference, after Bryce Young and Will Anderson kind of answered their questions, they went to get up and leave, and he stopped them. And I want to play that audio for you right now.
Thanks for your time. We'll let you head back to your locker room. All right.
I'd like to say something. Can I say something?
Absolutely.
You know, these two guys that are sitting up here, they're not defined by one game. These guys played great for us all year. They're great competitors. They were great leaders on this team. And they contributed tremendously to the success of this team. And we would not be here without them. All right? And both of them take responsibility for the loss. But both of them contributed in a lot of ways, in a positive way, to giving us a chance to win and a chance to be here to have an opportunity to win. So I just want to thank them for that and let everybody know how proud I am of these two guys.
Thank you, Coach.
Wow. I mean, that is leadership right there. That is that's what you got to do. Your kids lose a game like that. Your players lose a game like that. You have to bring them back up. Right. And Urban Meyer used to say it all the time. When things are going well, you got to coach them hard. When things aren't going well, you got to love them up. You got to bring them back up. You got to bring their, I guess, their energy. You got to bring everything back up. And for him to do that in the press conference, I thought was just awesome. Just awesome. It's a great lesson for everyone to learn from him. And also, it shows you why he's so successful. It really does. And despite the loss, I thought they played extremely well. Alabama played well. I mean, they did. They lost their two top pass catchers. They were down corners. I mean, they were, you know, they had as much adversity. They had more adversity than Georgia ever thought about having this year. And I thought Alabama played commendable. And when you look at the game, starting with Georgia's defense, obviously, just what a performance by the best defense in the country this past year. And I talked about it, you know, early in the year. What you've seen happen, and football is cyclical, right? For about the past 6 years, it was all about that big-time NFL quarterback and explosive offenses, the Clemson with Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, LSU, Mac Jones, Tua Tagovailoa at Alabama, Devontae Smith, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, all these huge offensive dynamite players. And you felt the trend circle back this year, where it was more about dominant defenses. Honestly, that Ohio State team we watched, they might have had a shot 3 years ago to win it all, because teams weren't playing great defense. It was all about ridiculous offenses. And that's not what this year was about. It was about great defenses. Starting with Georgia's defense, obviously the best in the country. But when you watched it, they did have weaknesses. I mean, you looked at Alabama's game plan. When they went into that game, Bill O'Brien made a point. He was going to go after Kelee Ringo. He didn't want to go at Darion Kendrick. He didn't throw at Darion Kendrick. He went after Kelee Ringo. And I told you the corners were the weakness of that team. And it's a damn shame Jameson Williams got hurt. Because despite the game-stealing interception, which, if we're being honest, he was beat on the route. It was two-man. He was in a trail, but he was beat. If Bryce Young throws a good ball there, that's a completed pass. The safety was not getting there. But Bryce made the worst throw I've seen in a national championship game with no pressure, no one around him. He didn't step into it, just an awful throw. And then Kelee Ringo's dumbass returns it for a touchdown when he should have just fallen down, game over. So many bad things can happen by returning that ball. But you look at Bill O'Brien's attack plan. He targeted Kelee Ringo 12 times for 8 catches and 141 yards. Jameson had a catch. He was 1-for-1 on him. Ja'Cory Brooks went 2-for-2 on him for 31 yards. Trayshawn Holden went 2-for-3 on him. The tight end Cameron Latu hit him for a 61-yarder. I mean, they went after Kelee Ringo, whether it was in zone, whether it was in man. They made a plan to go after his ass. And the reality was, Alabama had two solid wideouts on this team and a group of really, really young kids. And in the middle, there was no stopgap. There was no one there to fill the void when John Mechie and Jameson Williams got hurt. That's what happened. And so I wanted to look at why. Never mind the game. How did this happen at Alabama? You watch what Ohio State did, right? How loaded and deep their receiver room is. Why was Alabama's not? And I'm going to tell you why. Because they had two ridiculous recruiters and coaches at the receiver position when I was coaching, in Billy Napier and then Mike Locksley. Now they have Holman Wiggins, who bounced back in this 2021 class, but he had a rough three-year stint on the recruiting trail. Right, the only big time player he got in the last 3 years was Ja'Cory Brooks, who's a freshman. He was a huge get. I know he's a true freshman. He's young. So the question, where are the Julian Flemings at, right? Where are the Jackson Smith and Jigbas? Why did Alabama need to go get Jameson Williams to come in and be their alpha? He's a great player. He was the best receiver in the country, in my opinion. But why did they need him? It's Alabama. They recruited a high level, right? Holman Wiggins also hasn't been the primary recruiter for damn near any of the kids he has brought in. I mean, shit, Ja'Cory Brooks, the head coach at Marshall, Coach Charles Huff, he landed Ja'Cory Brooks. Now, Holman Wiggins helped, but you look at like the guys they won a national championship with, right? The four first rounders, the four horsemen at the receiver position, the number three receiver in the country, five-star Jerry Jeudy, Billy Napier, and Mario Cristobal recruited him. The number nine receiver in the country, Devontae Smith, Heisman Trophy winner, Burton Burns, the running back coach, recruited him, right? The number 11 receiver, Henry Ruggs, is an Alabama kid. Derek Ansley recruited him, the DB coach. How about Jalen Waddle, the fifth-ranked receiver in the country? Mike Locksley and Tosh Lapoy recruited him. So you look at their top last classes, like who should have been playing receiver in this game, right? Jalen Waddle was in the 2018 class. He's gone, left early. In that class, they recruited the 24th best receiver in the country, Xavier Williams, from Chaminade down in South Florida, who couldn't catch and didn't have the makeup or personality to become a great player. I don't know why they recruited him. It was my area, my position. I didn't recruit him. Alabama really wanted him for some reason. I didn't see it. Obviously, he transferred out. I can't remember where he went. And then the guy that actually produced in the game was Slade Bolden, who was the number 14 all-purpose running back in the country. He was a project take, a running back. So Jalen Waddle was the one get in 2018 who's not here anymore. No one else. They swung and missed huge on another Alabama kid named Justin Ross, who ended up going to Clemson. 2019, they signed John Mechie, who ended up becoming a good player. He was the number 40 ranked receiver in the country. And they missed on George Pickens, a Hoover, Alabama kid who played for Georgia and just won a national championship ring. And how about in 2020, right? Two classes ago, the guys that should have been there when Jameson and John Mechie got hurt. You had the number 25 receiver in the country. Thio Jones-Bell. You had the number 34 receiver in the country, Javon Baker, and the number 42 receiver in the country, Trayshawn Holden, right? None of those are top 100 kids. But they did have E.J. Williams, a Phoenix City, Alabama kid that went to Clemson, so they missed him. 2021, right? 2021, he got back to Bama got back to their ways. They signed the number 2 receiver in the class we talked about, Ja'Cory Brooks, number 5 receiver, Ajayi Hall, number 6 receiver, JoJo Earl, and the 10th receiver in the country, Christian Leary. They just had a lull in recruiting for about 3 years, 2020, 2019, 2018. Outside of Jalen Waddle, they didn't sign a big-time player. And that's why they were in the situation they were in with some injuries. You can't do that and compete for a national championship unless, God willing, everyone stays healthy. I mean, Alabama's skill was not Buckeye-esque, right? Jameson graded out the number 2 player on Bama's offense in his 22 snaps, and when he got hurt, he was left with Bolden, Brooks, and Holden were the three options. They graded out 58%, 56%, 56%. And they had three drops, I mean, some big drops that didn't help out Bryce Young at all. You watch this game, the victory for Georgia was in the interior, the D tackles against the interior O-line. The O-line for Alabama, the guard center guard struggled in a major way. They give up 17 quarterback pressures between the three of them. Emil Ikior Jr., the right guard, got a 48% pass pro grade. The center, Seth McLaughlin, had a 29% pass pro grade. And the left guard, Javion Cohen, had a 30% pass pro grade. So atrocious on the interior. All in all, Georgia had 27 quarterback pressures and got home 4 times to sack Bryce Young. The Georgia front was dominant. Jalen Carter was the defensive MVP for me. Maybe a co-defensive MVP with Lewis Cine, who played outstanding, but he had an 81% grade, number two on their defense, with six quarterback pressures. He and Jordan Davis were absolutely monsters in applying pressure and in the run game. Brian Robinson Jr. couldn't get loose at all, which, if you watch the Cincinnati game, that's what they had to do with John Metchie being out. And it only got amplified with Jameson Williams going down. 3.1 yards per carry. He had one really good run with four missed tackles on it. And they just couldn't get it going because the interior offensive line was getting dominated by Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis. That's just the reality of what happened. The biggest thing Georgia did to win this game was they kept Bryce Young out of the end zone. He had one touchdown on four red zone trips. Bama averaged three touchdowns on every four trips coming into this game. So they scored... I mean, you look back at the SEC championship game, they scored two touchdowns on three trips. They were hitting at about a 70% clip. So if they do what they normally did and Georgia didn't bow up in the red zone, they scored three out of four times in the red zone. That is an 8-point swing, right? Instead of a field goal, you get a touchdown. That's four more points per trip. That's an 8-point swing in a game that was an 8-point game before Bryce Young threw that awful pass to Kelee Ringo on a pick six. That was honestly a desperation. He shouldn't have thrown that pass. I mean, it was an awful throw, but you would have been a tie ball game with Alabama having the ball if they could have scored in the red zone. So that is where the game was won. You can end the show there. The game was won when Alabama had the ball in the red zone. Kirby Smart's defense bowed up. And Bryce Young played exactly how I told you all year he was playing, like a kid out back in a sandbox. He was making those throws that he makes. Little screens in the middle of the field, short throws under 10 yards in the middle of the field. I mean, he was 2 for 9 on deep balls with two interceptions, just putrid performance deep. Some of that was receiver-oriented. I get it. He was 6 for 19 over 10 yards, 32% over 10 yards. He was exactly 50% completion percentage on throws past the line of scrimmage. I'm talking any distance throw past the line of scrimmage. He only completed half of his throws. He was as average as shit versus blitz and base defense. Both of his interceptions were versus base defense when he was unpressured. We're talking about the Heisman Trophy winner. Heisman Trophy winning players are supposed to be dominant, like unstoppable. Joe Burrow, Cam Newton, Lamar Jackson, Jameis Winston, Tim Tebow. Unstoppable. Even non-quarterbacks, Devontae Smith, Derrick Henry. We're talking about players that just are, you can't stop them. Joe Burrow could not be stopped. There's nothing you could do to stop him. That's how good he was. That was not Bryce Young this year. I think Bryce Young is a Heisman caliber player, but he shouldn't have won it yet. I mean, we'll give out our Menace Awards on Thursday, but he's not going to be the Heisman winner. I promise you that. Probably not even going to win the Davey O'Brien Award or whatever we call it, the quarterback award. Bryce Young won the Heisman by default because the voting is flawed, the voters lack knowledge, and it's all about money and influence. It's just a joke. So Menace Awards on Thursday. Imagine if you didn't give out the awards until next week. Can you imagine if the Heisman Trophy wasn't decided until January 15th, let's say? Can you imagine how much different those votes would look? You shouldn't even receive the ballot to vote on it until after the national championship game for a number of reasons. One, I don't think Bryce Young wins it anymore. And two, I would bet you guys like Kenneth Walker III play in his bowl game. You want to stop opt-outs? You don't have to do anything else. Just move the award show to the end of the year. And if a kid's in Heisman Trophy contention, his ass is going to play in that game because he wants to win the Heisman. So I think that's the move. I think that, honestly, I think that would fix the opt-outs. You'd still have kids opt-out, and you should, right? It's a business decision. But I think if you move the award show after the season, more kids finish the season. You're not going to see, you know, Rondale Moore's and David Bell's opting out. You're not going to see Kenny Pickett and Kenneth Walker III opting out. That's not going to happen because Kenny Pickett wants to win the Davey O'Brien Award. Shit, he might have a shot at the Heisman, right, if Bryce Young falls apart. So that's what I think happened. But all in all, what a performance by Georgia's defense. They did exactly what they needed to do. I mean, they didn't stop Jameson. Jameson had a huge play and then got hurt. But once they didn't have to worry about him, man, they basically said, hey, Bryce, you're going to have to throw it outside of your comfort zone to beat us. You have to play outside the sandbox. Go on the beach. play in the sand in a bigger spectrum. Sideline to sideline, down the field, 2 for 9 on deep balls with 2 picks is all you need to know. But before we get to the defensive side of the ball, I do want to give a huge shout out to Freeze Pipe for sponsoring today's episode. Smoking cannabis doesn't have to hurt. And for colder, bigger hits, you got to check out Freeze Pipe. Freeze Pipe makes a freezable line of pipes, bubblers, bongs, and more. The secret is their freezable glycerin chambers. You pop one of these chambers in the freezer for 1 hour, and as you smoke, as your smoke passes through this icy chamber, it's instantly cooled by over 300 degrees. The results will shock you, and you'll notice bigger, smoother hits without the throat burn or intense coughing. Most people who use a freeze pipe report way less coughing, but everyone reports these are the smoothest bong rips ever. Smoking this good doesn't have to break the bank either. Stop overpaying for bongs that leave you with that dragon throat and come to the icy side. If you're ready to take bigger hits without the chest or throat burn, go to thefreezepipe.com, thefreezepipe.com, and use code MENACE for 10% off your next order. That's thefreezepipe.com, code MENACE, for 10% off anything in the store. So for you cannabis smokers out there, I felt like you should really get in on this. Go jump on a website, order you up a bowl, bong, whatever you want to get, a bubbler, a pipe, they got it all. And get 10% off, check it out, and then report back. Let me know what you think of the Freeze Pipe. Well, there you go. For any of you who like to smoke things, whatever you smoke, cannabis or whatever it is, go check that out. All right, let's talk about this other side of the ball. The Stetson Bennett story, the Rudy story, right? Rudy, but he actually played. So it's not like Rudy, who I've heard is a complete fraud, but never mind. That's neither here nor there. I guess I don't know that, so I probably shouldn't say it, but I've heard that from several people that he is a real piece of work ever since the movie. I didn't intend on putting that in the show, though. But Alabama's defense, statistically, I mean, they were right there with Georgia as one of the better defenses in the country. I have said, though, they were not a typical Nick Saban defense. They weren't as dominant. They weren't as secondary heavy. This game started, they were dominant. I mean, the first quarter, you're like, oh, shit, this defense came to play. I mean, 3 of the first drives ended in 3 and outs. But the key to the game, in my opinion, was the safety duo who I have regarded as the best safety tandem in college football. DeMarco Helms and Jordan Battle, they still are, but they played their collective worst game for the Crimson Tide in this game. I mean, Jordan Battle was their highest graded defensive player in 2021, ahead of Will Anderson Jr., ahead of he was the top defensive player. He graded out 90% on the year. But DeMarco Helms graded out 61%. Jordan Battle graded out 59%. They did not play great. Simple as that. You couple that with average, and I know their top corners were hurt, but average play from Kool-Aid McKinstry and Kyrie Jackson, 133 yards and a touchdown between the two. And this was the opposite of a normal Nick Saban defense. Nick Saban's a defensive back coach. He's a secondary coach. He always rode elite secondary play. Right? First round corners, and they always were so good in the secondary. I know this as a receiver coach. 1, we went against them, and 2, I studied them every year. Their defense was always secondary led. They always had unbelievable play out of their corners, and this was not that. You look at Stetson Bennett and what he was able to do. What a story if you haven't heard or read. Small town kid, you know, dad moved to rural Georgia, opened his own pharmacy, and next to this pharmacy in this really small town, he leveled a parking lot, put in an 80-yard football field, and that's where Stetson and all of his high school, you know, back then middle school, high school, all the way up through, where they would go hang out. They would go hang out there, practice there. He had no offers coming out, but Richard LeCount, who's one of my favorite players that I got to know, just a high-energy kid, plays for the Browns now. Richard LeCount, I believe it was Richard LeCount, told the Georgia coaches that he was the best quarterback he went against. And he had won against Davis Mills, who was the number one quarterback on a couple different services that went out to Stanford. And he told Kirby, he said, hey, listen, this kid's better than Davis Mills. I'm just telling you, I've went against him. I played against him. So he got a preferred walk-on to go to Georgia. And that is how it all started, all because of Richard LeCount. So you can backtrack what just happened in this story to Richard LeCount telling Kirby Smart. So this kid Stetson Bennett becomes a preferred walk-on at Georgia until obviously Jake Fromm's the guy. Then Justin Fields commits to Georgia. And Stetson Bennett realizes he's not going to get a shot at this job. He's not going to get a shot to be the quarterback at Georgia. So he transfers to a JUCO, Jones College, in Ellisville, Mississippi. Then he comes, he does a phenomenal job there, throws for 1,800 yards, something ridiculous. And he comes back to Georgia, and he only with one promise. He wanted a shot at the starting job. Kirby gave him that promise, and he was a backup to Jake Fromm. And when Jake Fromm left for the NFL, Kirby Smart, I guess, didn't really keep his promise, right? He went out and brought in Jamie Newman for Wake Forest, brought in JT Daniels from Georgia, recruited DeJuan Mathis out of high school, brought in three quarterbacks essentially because he knew Stetson Bennett wasn't good enough. All three were ahead of him on the depth chart after Jake Fromm left. Then Jamie Newman opted out for COVID, didn't want to play, wanted to go to the NFL. How'd that work out? And then JT Daniels gets hurt. So they're down to DeJuan Mathis, this raw freshman who's not very good, to be honest with you, or Stetson Bennett, the nerdy little white kid with a pocket protector. And Kirby Smart went with DeJuan Mathis, started the year, and was awful. Awful. It only lasted a couple games. I can't remember how many. But then Stetson Bennett got the job. He got to be the quarterback at Georgia last year, 2020, the COVID year. About, week six, they lose to Florida. Kirby realizes this kid, he's not good enough to go win a national championship. Even to win an SEC, he's not good enough. So he benches him, puts in JT Daniels. JT Daniels finishes the year. Lucky for Stetson Bennett, and honestly, lucky for Georgia fans and Kirby Smart, JT Daniels wasn't healthy to start this year again in 2021. The rest is history. Here we are. Small town kid brings home the hardware to Athens after 41 years. Without a national championship, the Georgia Bulldogs win it all on the back of Stetson Bennett, the white kid from Road Trip. I will say this. When Georgia could keep him clean in this game, he was awesome. Almost had an 80% completion percentage when he wasn't under pressure, 209 yards and two touchdowns. That's outstanding. He was 2 for 2 on deep balls because the one throwaway deep ball doesn't count. 2 for 2 on deep balls for almost 100 yards and a touchdown. But how about this? They only had him attempt 6 throws over 10 yards. 6 in the national championship game. A game where we watched Joe Burrow throw for a bazillion yards. Trevor Lawrence, Mac Jones, torch Ohio State. I mean, he threw 6 passes over 10 yards and is getting a national championship ring. He completed 67% of them, so 4 of 6. Now, Alabama pressured the shit out of him. Pressured him 19 times, sacked him 5. But when Georgia could keep him out of pressure, he was on his shit. They had a great game plan against Will Anderson Jr., the best defensive player in college football, in my opinion. And the tackle duo of Jermary Sailor and Warren McClendon played really well in pass pro. I mean, Will Anderson Jr. had an 8-game sack streak going into this game. He recorded multiple sacks in 5 of those 8 games. He had 0 in this game. Credit due to Todd Monken and the O-line coach, Matt Luke, who was the head coach at Ole Miss, if you don't know him. Outstanding offensive line coach. They did their job. I mean, they didn't let Will Anderson Jr. take over the game or affect Stetson Bennett. I mean, he came into the game. Will Anderson Jr. came into the game averaging 6 quarterback pressures per game. And he only had 2 in this game and didn't get home once. That's an outstanding job. Now, the pressure they did get, what a dominant performance from Christian Harris. 3 sacks, 6 quarterback pressures. He picked it up blitzing from the linebacker position. But Georgia, that 3-headed monster in the backfield, provided the impact to win the game. Zamir White, 6.5 yards per carry, 13 carries for 84 yards and a touchdown. James Cook, monster, 12.8 yards per carry. Now, he had that huge 67-yard run. It was dominant. He had 5 carries for 10 yards otherwise. So he provided that big spark that you want your backup running back to provide. And then Kenny McIntosh is the best. I don't know, do you call him a third-string running back? 5 touches for 28 yards. He was huge coming out of the backfield. Had a monster kickoff return to really set to impact the game. He was great. The backfield won the game. The offensive line won the game. And the game plan put together by Todd Monken won the game. Because Georgia was awful on third down. They converted 33% of their third downs. They won the penalty award, if you can call it that. 10 penalties for 70 yards. They had far more penalties than Alabama. And if you watch the game, looked like the refs had quite the Nick Saban bias. Christ. I mean, Georgia got every call against them. But where I outside of the red zone where Georgia won the game was the turnover battle. And Stetson Bennett tried to not win this battle. I mean, he fumbled once and Alabama got it back. The other time, looked like he was playing basketball. He dribbled the ball off the turf and thank God got it back. But they won the turnover battle 2-1, which is huge in a game of this magnitude. You're talking about small areas of the game that can add points to the board or take off points. Georgia got one extra possession in what was a one-possession game. You couple that with three defensive stops in the red zone. I mean, that is 14-point swing. You take away that pick six, that's the difference between Georgia winning by 7 and Alabama winning by 8. That's what it is. And Georgia on offense was 2-for-3 touchdowns in the red zone. And they hit the field goal to go 3-for-3 scoring. So that's the difference of the game. It's the national championship. You have to hit on all cylinders and win those small battles. You're not just going to get your ass kicked in a game of that magnitude. Both teams are going to be really good. You have to win those small battles when it's a pretty evenly matched team, and that is what Georgia did. Their red zone defense won the game. Their turnover, protecting the ball, won the game. Scoring touchdowns when they were in the red zone won the game. They got one more touchdown than Alabama in the red zone, and essentially, I'm discounting the pick six. They were up by one touchdown. With 1 minute left, right? That is what happened. So, what an end to the college football season. Kirby Smart gets the monkey off of his back, beats Nick Saban finally for the first time, and it was in one that counted to win the national championship of college football. I believe the right team was crowned. Sometimes, you know, 2015, I don't think the right team was crowned. I think 2015, the best team in college football was the Ohio State Buckeyes. I'm a little biased, but I believe the right team was crowned the champions of college football. Despite the lackluster offensive firepower, despite Stetson Bennett looking like the kid in the chemistry class you cheat off of his test, despite all of that, I think Georgia was the best team wire to wire and at the end of the year in college football and deserved to win it all. With how they dismantled Michigan and how they gutted it out against a solid Alabama team, I believe that The football gods got it right. I also believe the right four teams were in the playoffs. So for a broken system, it sure worked well. I don't know what else to tell you. So great season. Appreciate everybody for listening to this show all season long. We are not going anywhere. We are going to bring you quality content through the offseason with recruiting and all the off spring ball, everything going on. We are here to bring you a fresh breath, a breath of fresh air. A different perspective into the world of football. Obviously, NFL playoffs heating up. We're going to incorporate that a little more. Try to grow and expand and make this your mainstay stop for football content. That's what we're trying to do. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. A special thank you for being here all season and for what looks like this is going to be an even bigger week than last week, which was a 90,000 download week. We're aiming for 100,000 downloads this week. We are on pace to do it. Go leave us a 5-star review and drop a question for our mailbag morning show episode on Friday, wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you. And as always, if you didn't like it, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
What a hit, Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there? And you didn't invite me, hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25-30, 35-40, 45-50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Well, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State. Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here then. Okay, see ya.